Everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome in. This is Mr. Z with the Clever Minds Radio here on BBS Radio. I am live here in Las Vegas, Nevada. I am happy to be with you folks this morning. It's a beautiful day here today, folks. We're going to have a great, great show today here, folks. I'm so excited and stoked. Got new glasses, so I'm trying to figure out, looking through my bifocals and looking through everything at the same time. So bear with me. If you folks see me out there, critique me. Give me some information about how you want me to look on the camera, how you want me to adjust everything. I'm going to be able to do everything you want me to do. So please just let me know. It's all about feedback. Also, too, folks, we're going to be going to on the road doing a lot of different things. So I'm going to be taking the show out of my home and dealing a whole different aspect. I'm thinking about taking out a show out on the road maybe 2 days out of the week. Also, I'm going to be getting better webcams. I had to adjust my webcam yesterday. I was on KLAV yesterday, and I was fiddling around. I had a Lando Caesar on with the Isle of Knowledge on, and it was really, really weird. I got some different really into video quality and audio quality, so I'm trying to get that adjusted as well, too. Today's person we're having on today is the author. The Triangle of Truth, folks. This lady's going to give us some really good information. And we're going to have her on. And I'm going to go here, and I'm going to see if I have any info here through my Skype and see what I got going on here. I've got to learn all this stuff, folks. I'm trying. At the same time, you know, you've got to – there we go. We've got – oh, I've got a phone call in the other room. Hold on, folks. Be right back. Bear with me here. Hello, we're waiting for you on the air. You there? Hello? All right, folks. I think that was my guest. We're going to find out what's going on here. Let me figure out. I know I should have kept this phone in here with me. This is live radio, folks, so, hey, bear with me here. It's going to be a very, very dynamic guest. Come on, cell phone. Let me type and see if I got a message. Come on, phone. There we go. All righty. We're trying to find Lisa here. Hi, Lisa. This is Mr. Z with the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. I just missed your call. I'm waiting for your call here on the BBS radio, so we'll find out what's going on. So give me a call. I gave you the call information. We'll just go from there. Let's see what's going on, and we're going to have you on momentarily, all righty? So just give me a call back. Bye-bye. All right, folks. We'll see what happens with her and see what's going on. Okay, Lisa is on the line. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I was worried about that for a minute. Lisa.
Hey, how's it going?
What happened to you, huh? You called my cell phone.
Yeah, I didn't have quite the right call-in number, but I figured it out.
Ah, good morning.
Good morning. It's much earlier for you than it is for me.
No, I wake up at 4:45 every morning. I'm a happy man. Life is good to me. I've got dynamic guests like you on my show, so I'm all giddy and happy.
Excellent.
So let's tell my audience who you are, please.
I'm Lisa McLeod. I am a business consultant and a syndicated columnist, and my newest book is called The Triangle of Truth, The Surprisingly Simple Secret to Resolving Conflicts, Large and Small.
You hear that, folks? Turning negative into a positive. Tell me something. I had you on the air on Sunday, and I didn't get you to keep you on as long as I wanted to, but today is all you, so... How did your book, give us a story of how your book ended up in Congress, please.
Well, I'll kind of take you back to the book was written for a general audience for how to solve problems with your business colleagues, with your crazy neighbor, with your spouse. And it's funny now that it's ended up in Congress, which I'll tell you about in a second. It's every member of Congress is going to get a copy of it next week, and I'll tell you about that process in just a second. But it's funny that it's ended up back there, because it was actually political differences that inspired me to write the thing in the first place. As I said, I'm a business consultant, and I do a lot of work in the sales and leadership arena. And one of the things that I work with people on is helping people better connect with their customers, better connect with their team, really understanding where the other person's coming from. And something happened during the 2004 election that proved to be a transformational experience for me. I was part of two communities at the time. One was very, very conservative, and one was very, very liberal. One was a church, and one was a neighborhood. And I was in a leadership role in both of those. And both groups assumed that I was one of them. So they spoke freely about the other side, about all those crazy liberals or all those crazy conservatives. And what I noticed when they talked about the people on the other side, because they assumed everyone in the room was in agreement, and so I got to hear both sides of this, what I noticed was that they were not arguing about the merits of the other side's solutions. What they went immediately to was the other side's values. And I have to say they were helped along a lot by radio and TV ads, but they were questioning the other side's intelligence and their moral values, and the arguments sounded exactly the same. And so what I realized was this was an exaggerated version of what I was seeing in corporate America, where salespeople can't make good sales calls because all they do is talk about themselves and they don't ask the customer any questions, where leaders, the IT guy, can only see things through the IT lens and he doesn't talk to the ops people or the finance people. And I saw it in this very, very exaggerated environment politically, and I realized it's this either-or way of thinking, I'm right so you must be wrong, and there's a couple elements of that. And so I thought, if we can solve this problem, this I'm right so you must be wrong problem, we can solve all our other problems. So it took like 4 years, and I researched some of the best problem solvers in history, including Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, who are two of the people that are featured in the book, a little story about them. And what I found was when you peel back the layers, there were actually a couple of elements of it. And one of the elements, the very most basic element, was this either-or way of thinking. And so I have a chapter in the book where we talk about how to get beyond that. But one of the other elements is this failure to differentiate between the other side's solution and their actual intention. And I'll give you an example of that. One of the debates going on right now is about health care. And the liberal side believes that the conservative side's intention is to deny people health care. That's, if you hear a bunch of liberals talk, that's what they would say. The conservatives believe, don't you think? Don't you hear that?
Right, yeah. Do me a favor real quick. Hold on. I think we're echoing. I'm getting a repeat that we're echoing, and I'm trying to figure out why we're echoing. Let me talk to the engineer. Don't go anywhere. Keep your thought. Keep everything going, because I just want to make sure everything's right. This is all new to me. Uh-oh. I just lost everybody. You still there?
I'm still here, and I can still hear you.
Okay. Let me check out my feed here. Make sure everything's right. Come on, Mr. Z. No echo here. All right, then. I got it. Okay, no problem. All right. So I'm mean to cut you short. I have someone critiquing me for me. Tell me something. What made you really look for some of the best problem solvers there are? And how did you find out who they were?
The way it evolved was I had this paradigm in my head. And once you get a little lens on something, you start to see it everywhere. And so I had this little lens in my head that this either-or way of thinking doesn't work. I used to also teach a negotiating class based on the Harvard negotiating techniques. And one of the things that I saw in that class was that the people, it's all about creating a win-win. And the people who went in with a true intention, really wanting a win for the other side, inevitably came out with better solutions than the people who went in trying to use a technique to make the other side think they won. That's a really important differentiator. When you go on with the technique to make the other side feel like I'm going to use they won, and I'm going to use this technique to try and get what I want, and I'm going to use all these skills to try and make them feel like they got what they want, that's a very, very different intention from I'm going to use these skills to truly try to create a win-win because I don't want them just to think they won. I want them to actually win. And so I noticed that people could use the same skills but have a very different result, and it was due to their intention. So that got me studying a lot of business leaders. I looked at big conflicts that had been solved, people that had created unique solutions, and one of those examples was the founding of America. Thomas Jefferson, many say, was the original liberal, and John Adams was the original conservative, by most historians' account. And they came together to, they were the two men primarily responsible for writing and presenting the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson wrote most of it, Adams presented it. And it was that combination of different ideals that created this new form of government. And so it really showed me that it's not about compromising on this middle ground. It's about losing your attachment to the solution and bringing your best intentions, and then you create a completely different solution. And so I saw that in a lot of other places, on an individual basis and on an institutional basis.
Oh, okay. Now, to me, the triangle of truth, I'm trying to put it together exactly what it means. So I'm going to be a little bit stupid right now. What exactly is the triangle of truth?
When we came up with these techniques, and the book has seven principles in it, what I realized is people need a visual model because it just sort of resets you and gives you a place to go. And our current model of negotiating and conflict resolution, typically the way our minds approach it, picture a straight line. And I'm on the left side of the line, you're on the right side of the line. And traditional wisdom says that we should meet in the middle. We should compromise. And when we go into it with that mentality, what that tells us is right from the start, we're assuming I'm going to have to give something up. And so you can take two approaches. You can say, oh, I'll be really kind, I'll be really nice, and I'll give something up. Or you can take the hardliner approach, and I used to teach these tactics and negotiation skills about how to get more from the other person than you give. But it's all based on this paradigm of the line, and you're on one side and I'm on the other. So what I realized is we need a different visual model because the visual is what we can attach ourselves to. So picture the visual of a triangle where you're on the left, I'm on the right, and our solution is at the top. And the reason it's called the triangle of truth is because it's based on the core truth of both sides. And I will give you an example from a relationship standpoint. One of the things people, I write this personal development column, runs in a lot of newspapers, and a lot of people would write me letters about a common problem in marriage where one person wanted more sex and the other person wanted more talking. And so this common problem, I'm not going to say, not going to stereotype who wanted what, but a lot of times, if we want to improve this marriage, we should talk more, we should share our feelings, we should communicate more. And the other person is thinking, if we want to improve this marriage, we can have more sex. And so when you approach it that way, one person saying, more talking, the other person saying, more sex, more sex, more sex, what they both want is to be closer in the marriage. And when you that's just a really simple example to look at. What we really want is more talking and more sex. But we treat them like they're these two diametrically opposed things. And so what happens is, the reason we call it the triangle of truth, when you distill down to the core truth of that fight, the core truth of that fight is talking and sharing feelings makes me feel closer to you. Having sex with you makes me feel closer to you. And once you get the truth on the table, the real truth, not the solution, but the truth is never in conflict with the truth. Going back to the healthcare debate, the truth is children shouldn't go without healthcare. And we shouldn't be saddling the next generation with a ton of debt.
Yes, I agree with you on that
one. No one's going to disagree with that. Yeah, no one's going to disagree with that. And so we've got to get it down to the core truth that everyone can agree with. Then we argue about the solution from there. But when you're in a solution fight, it doesn't work. You got to get it down, dial it back to the core truth. So that's why we call it the triangle of truth. We've got a series of questions that you can ask. And in fact, the listeners can get a free download on our website at triangletruth.com. One of the things we have is a free download of 10 great questions to ask your coworker, your prospect, or your spouse. And that will help you sort of get that dialogue, dial it down to the core truths, kind of peel away all the surface solutions and really get it down to the core truths so you can have a productive conversation.
I'm looking in the book here, and I've read it, and I get it, and I really like the premise of the book as well, too. And I'm on a page right now that says, How to Organize Your Mind. What do you mean by how to organize your mind?
How to organize your mind. You know what would be really helpful right now? If you told me what page you were on.
Okay. I'm in the big book, page 80.
Page 80, okay. How to organize your mind. That's where the model really comes in. And one of the distinctions that we made in the book, it was really clear, is that super successful people approach their interactions with other people from a completely different mindset. And we study performers across a variety of professions, sales, leadership, because the reality is you're not going to be successful in the world of work without interactions with other people. Whether you're a leader, whatever role you play, if you want to be super successful at work, you have to be really skilled at getting other people to go along with your plans and your ideas. And what we found when we studied performers across a variety of professions was that the really super successful people approached their interactions with other people from a completely different mindset. Average people tended to go into a meeting or a sales call thinking about what they wanted to accomplish, their goals. Now, poor performers don't generally have any goals, so that's a whole different arena. But we wanted to focus on what's the difference between average people and the top 2%. So average people go into any kind of meeting, and they generally have goals. Superstars had a very different mentality. Their brain organized themselves. They organized themselves mentally very differently. They went into an interaction with someone else thinking, I've got my goals, and back to this triangle. This is where we create the triangle. On my side of the triangle, and, not either or not but, and I need to find out how the world looks like from where this other person sits, what we call their side of the triangle. And this is a really subtle but distinct difference in thinking, because how many times have you been in a meeting with someone who was clearly goal-oriented, clearly had a plan, but it's so off-putting because all they were focused on was what they wanted. Have you experienced that?
You know, I deal with that a lot because I'm in the restaurant business and dealing with customers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and it can be very, very off-putting. And the thing is, we know what it looks like in an exaggerated version, and it's off-putting. But what we don't realize is it shows up in very subtle ways, and it's subtly off-putting, and it undermines our success. And again, that's that difference between the average performer and the superstar, is it very subtly undermines our success. And so you can literally, some of the research we did for the book, what we uncovered was when you're interacting with someone, 93% of what they respond to is your mindset. Only 7% of what they respond to is your words, the actual words you say. The other 93% is the unconscious message that you communicate via your body language, via your tone of voice. They can feel it. You can feel it. That's why everybody talks about used car salespeople, because you can feel it. They're ready to pounce. And I know that everyone in the used car business is not that way. But when they come up and say, hi, can I help you? It feels very different than when someone at the Apple store comes up and says, hi, can I help you? Same words, very, very different feeling. And so this notion of organizing your mind is really powerful because it has a dramatic impact on the success or failure of your interactions. The other reason it's so powerful is it's really easy, and you can do it yourself right before you interact with someone. It doesn't cost you anything. So if all you do before you go in to interact with someone is be very clear about what you want and your goals, but also hold the space for their goals, So if you think before you go into a meeting, it's about my agenda and their agenda, and really shift. It's not just a brain shift, to be honest with you. It's sometimes a heart shift. The brain goes first, the heart will follow. Is really shift your heart to feel like what I really want is for them to be successful, because that was the commonality we found in all the superstar performers, is that they weren't just faking it when they went in to talk with somebody. They really did want to know what was on that person's mind, and they really did want to make them successful. So if you fake it for a while, it'll start to become real.
Now, the average person, if they pick up this book, what do you think they'll get out of it?
The number one thing that they will get out of the book is they will become more effective in their interactions with other people, and they will get what they want more, a higher percentage of the time. That is the number one thing they will get out of it.
Oh, okay. To me,
and it's kind of counterintuitive.
People, go ahead, say it again.
Yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive, because the way they're going to get what they want is by having a better understanding of the other person, and there's some real simple techniques. But at the end of the day, read the book, apply the principles, you'll be significantly more successful in your interactions with others.
Oh, okay. I'm having an echo problem, and my engineer is telling me some things, and I'm trying to get it fixed, because everyone's saying you're echoing, and I'm echoing, so I'm trying to get everything fixed just right. So I'm going to turn everything down, and I'm going to go from there. So here we go again. Now, or solving the truths in life very simple? It's like, you know, surprising simple secrets resolving around the conflicts in large and small. And do you think we overanalyze things when we're trying to get to the basics of the truth?
I think we overanalyze things and under question.
Oh,
because
ooh,
I think
I like
instead
that.
Of coming
Why?
From a place of inquiry, we come from a place of judgment.
Say that one more time.
We overanalyze and under-inquire. We come from a place of judgment instead of a place of inquiry and just trying to understand. Instead of coming from a place of trying to understand, we come from a place of judgment and overanalyze them in the sense of we're trying to make sense of things when in most cases we really don't have all the information. So we overanalyze what someone does, someone we don't like, be it a coworker, be it our spouse, be it our teenager, be it our, you know, political adversary. We overanalyze what they do in the sense of, well, they're probably doing this because of this and this because of this, and we attribute all of these motives to them that they may or may not have had, but we're dead certain they did have. Instead of looking at their behavior from a point of inquiry, we try to figure out why they did it instead of just wondering, why are they doing that? From a real place of appreciative inquiry. Instead, we come from a place of, I bet I know why they're doing that, because of this, this, and this. It's a very subtle but very important difference.
You know, I'm dealing with that right now. That makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm going to go to an older crowd of people here. Maybe they understand this. I was going through it, and I'm going to say I've been reading it because I had to read one book at a time. I saw something in there that said something about POWs. What do you mean by POWs?
Well, are actually one POW story and one study of POWs that were very, very powerful that we include in the book. This is really important because it shows the power of choosing your thoughts. The first set of POWs is the POWs in the Korean War. This is very interesting. This is based on some work by Donald Clifton, who's the grandfather of the positive psychology movement. And this is documented in the preface to the book he wrote with his grandson, Tom Rath, who's now the head of Gallup's Workplace Initiative. And this study that he read, that his grandfather read, of POWs actually inspired his work over his lifetime. And a little-known fact about POWs in the Korean War, they had the highest death rate of any POWs before or since. However, they also had some of the best physical conditions, because what was done to them, which is very interesting, is their captors tortured them with mental negativity. They had adequate food, they had adequate water, they had adequate shelter, they were not physically abused. But what their captors did was they had a barrage of relentless negative messages. And if the POW got a dear John letter or an overdue bill from home, they would get it. They would get all the negative mail they could. They routinely said negative, 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 awful things about the POWs to them. But one of the things that they did that was the most effective in breaking the will of the men was they instituted a policy where you could rat somebody out and the other person wouldn't get in trouble. So, like, if I found out that you had cigarettes in your bunk, I could rat you out, and I would get rewarded for ratting you out, and you wouldn't get in any trouble at all. So at first pass, you think, well, gosh, I should just rat him out because I still like him, but he's not going to get in any trouble, and I'm going to get a reward. So that prompted the men to rat each other out. And so what happened was they broke the bonds between the men, and the men had nothing to live for because everything in their life was negative. Everything. They didn't even have the bonds of their fellow prisoners. And so what killed a lot of the men was what the soldiers called give-up-itis, which is when the soldier would just crawl over to the to his hut, put a blanket over his head, and die. Now, contrast that with the Vietnam War. And there's a story of Admiral James Stockdale, who was the highest-ranking officer in the Hanoi Hilton, and is credited with keeping the men alive, body and soul, despite relentless torture. Admiral Stockdale was in the Hanoi Hilton for 7 years, tortured all the time. Many people know Admiral Stockdale because he ran with Ross Perot. It was a vice presidential candidate on Ross Perot's ticket.
I'm going to laugh, but they made a funny thing about a skit about him on Saturday Night Live. Is that the general you're talking about?
They did. And when he showed up as the vice presidential candidate, he was really out of place and talked about it years later. And, you know, he just was not prepared for that. And the sad thing is, for a lot of younger people, including myself, because I didn't know the backstory on him at the time, that was the only impression he made on people. But he actually is a hero, a huge hero, a war hero. So he's in the Hanoi Hilton, and one of the things that he said, and this was quoted in the book Good to Great, which first got me interested in the story, he talks about the ability to face the brutal facts. Because when the author of Good to Great asked Admiral Stockdale who were the guys that didn't survive, Stockdale said, oh, those were the optimists, which is counter to what you think. He said, the optimists are the guys that thought we'd be out by Christmas, that thought we'd be out by, you know, Easter, thought we'd be out by Thanksgiving. Christmas comes and goes. Thanksgiving comes and goes. And they wind up dying of a broken heart. He said, you've got to be able to look the facts in the face. Yet at the same time, he said, when I was in there, I never lost the faith that I would prevail. The faith that I would eventually make it out. And so he said, this is a really important differentiator. Look at the facts, which is, hey, we might be tortured tomorrow. We don't know when the hell we're getting out of there. So the specifics of our situation are really, really bad. And you also have to be able to hold on to the faith that you will be okay. And there's a very telling story. This is why Stockdale's men were able to survive. I'll tell you the story of what happened when they were being tortured, whereas people in the Korean War died when they weren't being tortured. Because what happened was, there was one time when Stockdale was the third anniversary of his being shot down, and he was being held in solitary confinement, and his men wanted to send a message to Stockdale, because this is his third anniversary. He was their leader. They wanted to send him a message, and the prison was on a lockdown, imposed silence. And so Stockdale had developed this code system where they could communicate with each other. And so they were out sweeping the yard, and they could sweep in code. And so the message that they sent to Stockdale was, we love you. And when the men talked about this, and Stockdale talked about it, it's obviously a very emotional moment for them, but it displays that depth of emotion, that knowing that they all loved each other enabled them to survive torture where other people that had adequate adequate living conditions and weren't being tortured, died. And that just demonstrates the power of positive emotions, that they override bad physical conditions. And so that's one of the things in the book that we talk about, is how when you transform the emotional climate of a situation, the whole situation transforms. So Stockdale was the leader in that situation that changed the emotional climate. There was no such leader in those Korean War POW camps. There was no Stockdale, so the guys died.
Lisa, tell us who you are so that people that just joined us here on the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. This is Mr. Z. I am the host of the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show, where we turn negative into positive. I'm here with Lisa Earl McLeod. She's the author of The Triangle of Truth. And let me know how they can get in touch with you, please.
Our website is triangleoftruth.com, and there's a contact button on there. We also have a lot of free things on our website, because I want to be really clear. I run a training company. We do a lot of training in corporate America. I wrote this book. Our number one goal is for people to be able to use this model. So what we've done is we put as much free stuff as we possibly could on our website, so that if you're not inside of a big company, you're listening to this, that you can go download that off the website. And if you look on our website, there's a button that says resources, and there are a number of free articles that talk about using this model in a variety of situations, in sales and leadership and parenting. There are some download worksheets. There's one that's one of my favorite. It's very, very simple. It's a meeting prep worksheet. If you're going into a potentially contentious meeting with your boss, with your spouse, it's a simple worksheet that you can fill out to your point earlier, to organize your mind in the right way to make you more effective. So anybody can go on our website and download all that stuff for free.
Oh, okay. Now, here we go. I got another part of the book that I'm looking at. It's on page 56. Two game-changing dualities. Did I say that right? Is it choosing
duality,
love over fear?
It's however you want to say it.
No, tell me, did I say it wrong? I'm looking through my glasses at an angle.
Well, these are the two things that, if you can think these two thoughts, these are the game changers. One is, and this relates directly to two of the principles in the book, because the first principle is embrace and the second principle is make peace with ambiguity. Because, you know, we're humans, we always want everything all certain. So here are two things. If you can think these two things before you go into an interaction with someone, embrace and is really important when it comes to thinking about other people. Because what tends to happen with other people is we either put them in the good category or the bad category. And we've all experienced this, where you meet someone, you think they're wonderful, you think they're fabulous, and then you find out something about them you don't like, or they behave in a way you don't like. You move them to the bad category. We've also had the other experience, where we meet someone, we think they're terrible, we think they're awful, and then something is revealed about them that gives us some more positive insight into them. And what you have to recognize is we tend to want to give people the thumbs up or the thumbs down. That's just the way our brain works, because it's like a 1980s hierarchical computer. You just put people in one category or the other. But when you embrace and, what you have to realize is everybody's good and bad. And the terminology that we use in the book is everyone's flawed and everyone's fabulous. And that includes yourself.
You know what? I'm flawed in so many ways because society has got me twisted. I don't know. Sometimes I'm like a... some clothes on a clothesline. Wherever the wind blows, I kind of go that way. But I have to. Sometimes you have to be strong in order not to be so wishy-washy. And when you're not on your best, people can just kind of push you around everywhere you want to go. I just think, personally, you have to hold your convictions, and no matter how people judge you, just hold strong to them, but still have an open mind. That makes sense?
Yeah, and it is, to your point, you know, is it wishy-washy or is it flexible? You know, any virtue, any vice any virtue taken to an extreme becomes a vice. And what happens is we want to categorize things. We look at someone who's flexible and say, oh, they're so wishy-washy. Well, maybe they're flexible at times and it works really well for them, and it takes to the extreme, and they're wishy-washy at other times and it works really well, and it doesn't work so well. So these two game changers that we talk about are, the first one is in every interaction with other people, we have to be willing to accept everyone is flawed and everyone is fabulous, including me. Because what we often do to ourselves is we think we're either trying to pretend we're perfect or we're beating ourselves up because we're not. So if we accept this, everyone is flawed and everyone is fabulous. And the second game changer is this making peace with ambiguity. And the thing we need to think there is when we go into situations, I have a plan and I'm flexible. So it's that duality again. I have a plan and I'm flexible. So if you approach every person in your life, from strangers to the person you're the closest to, that you're the most intimate with, if you think about every person in this way, everyone is flawed and everyone's fabulous. And you approach every situation thinking, I have a plan and I'm flexible. If you can do those two things, you've basically changed the way you approach people and the way you approach situations. And when you change the way you approach people and you change the way you approach situations, you basically change your whole life. So if you can just think those two things, that'll change your relationship with people and that'll change your response to situations.
Okay. I'm going to say something and I'm going to read this and then I'm going to have somebody on the line I need to say hello to. But I'm going to read this and I want you to answer back to this when I come back from this gentleman. Hold space for others' perspective. Okay, solving your agenda versus my agenda, quagmire. The highest possible stage in moral culture is when we recognize that we ought to control our thoughts. Charles Darwin. Now, hold on to that. Hello there, Eric. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. Welcome in. I'm glad you called in today. I want everyone to know Eric's going to be on the show on Friday, and I want him to say hello to everybody, let everybody know that I haven't forgotten about him. He's the gentleman of branding yourself. How you doing today, sir?
I'm very good. I'm doing great.
Great. So you're all excited about Friday for me, right?
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it.
Okay, then. So you have anything you want to let everybody know about Friday while I have you on here for a brief moment?
Well, I just wrote a book called Branding Yourself, Using Social Media to Invent or Reinvent Yourself. And it's all about personal branding and using your network, growing your network to establish your expertise or even find a new job.
Okay. Well, folks, he's going to be on the show all by his lonesome, just like Lee says today, on Friday on bbsradio.com, Clever Minds. And I appreciate you calling in today, Eric, and I will speak with you soon. Okay, sir?
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, Miss Lisa. Hold space for others' perspectives. Why do we have to do that?
Well, back to this Charles Darwin quote that the highest possible stage in a moral culture is when we recognize that we can control our own thoughts. We think that we respond to each other based on the words we say. And as I shared, some of the research that I did for the book revealed that 93% of our response is not the actual words we say. It's the vibe that we get from somebody. And I'll use an example. One of the things we do in our training is we use the phrase, where were you last night? And I can say that in a couple of different ways. Where were you last night? Where were you last night? Those have two completely different meanings. And it's the exact same words. And so that is a dramatic example of how you can tell what I mean, what I'm thinking. And so holding a space for other perspectives is organizing your mind and controlling your thoughts in a way that says, I actually care about what you think. And this is really important because earlier I mentioned fake it till you make it. This is one of those areas where that works. We've all been in meetings where you're making your point and someone else says, but what about that? And you just want to roll your eyes and say, why are you bringing up that stupid irrelevant thing? It has nothing to do with anything and you're getting me off point. You're just trying to steal the room. But we're polite, so we don't say that. We go, well, tell us a little more about that. But the reality is if what we're thinking is, God, you stupid idiot, you always bring up this stuff, that's what we're communicating loud and clear. And that's not to say that we can't, that sometimes the appropriate response isn't, you stupid idiot, why are you bringing up this stuff? But if that's what you're thinking, you might as well say it because your body's communicating it loud and clear all the time. And even if they're not processing it consciously, they're processing it unconsciously. So what the book teaches you how to do is how to hold a space for their perspective. You don't have to agree. You don't have to disagree. All you have to do is organize your mind. It goes back to that triangle in a way that says, I have an agenda, and they might have an agenda. And you can tell when someone is open to your ideas, your thoughts, and your feelings. The other person picks up on that. They pick on it subconsciously first, and it changes the energy of the interaction. They will also pick up on it very consciously. Over time, if you do it, you will hear people, leaders who are really good at this, you hear people say, wow, you know, he always listens. Gosh, he's someone that if you have a problem, you can just go to him or her. So over time, you get a reputation for that. But it usually starts subconsciously, and so all you have to do is change the way you think before your interactions.
Mm. Okay, here we go. The next one. Why your body is smarter than your brain. Why is that?
Right. Well, your body is always responding to situations and to other people. As I said, you've got like this 93% is the subconscious and 7% is the actual words that you say, the content when you're interacting with someone. And so in many cases, your body is a reflection of your unconscious. And so you ever have that situation where you say, I don't know, something about that bugged me. Something about him I just didn't like. Chances are you're right. You picked up on something about the other person, good or bad, and in most cases, you're generally right because your subconscious picked up on all these cues, and when you start sort of feeling a certain way, pay attention to that. An author, Dave Ramsey, who's the financial guru who I just love,
one of the things he said,
pardon?
No, I'm saying I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, he's great. And one of the things he said, I went to one of his programs for business owners, and one of the things he was talking about was as a couple, you go out and meet a financial planner, and this was a special comment for the men. He said, if after you meet the person and you're all ready to do it and your wife says, oh, I don't know, I don't like him. I can't tell you why. I just don't have a good feeling about him. He said, listen to your wife. She doesn't have to have a reason. She doesn't have to have anything. She is more in tune from an emotional standpoint. And if she feels like there's something wrong, run the other direction. She doesn't need to give you any reasons at all. And I just thought that was really funny because he's right. He's right. And I will tell you, as a general rule, women, maybe rule too strong, generally speaking, women are often more in that feeling space than men are. And so they're generally more skilled at reading the feelings of a situation.
That is so true, and it's annoying at times, but that is very, very true. And I've just found that to be very, very consistent about some of the things that goes on in my life. Now, let's get to some things that I want to get people to get to turn a negative into a positive of things in life. I see principle 4, seek higher ground. How to raise above the comfort and convenience of false choices. All right, Thomas Jefferson has a quote here. For here we are not afraid to follow the truth, whatever it may lead. What do you think about that? That's from your book.
Yeah, the seek higher ground is really around creating a different paradigm for yourself. And if you go into, and this is where the story of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, which is just, you know, I'm kind of a history nerd, and the story of how those two came together for the Declaration of Independence is just so exciting to me. And what happened was Thomas Jefferson is the one that we credit with writing it, but what a lot of people don't know is how he ended up writing it. Benjamin Franklin was ill. John Adams was the next highest statesman in line, so the job fell to him. And he actually turned to Thomas Jefferson and said, you're a better writer than I am. I think you should do this. We think of Thomas Jefferson as very eloquent, but he was actually a terrible speaker. There were no videos back then, and so everyone just read his writing and thought he was a genius. And he was. But so he writes the Declaration of Independence. Then after he's done writing it, the greatest work of his life, many would say, he actually turns it back over to John Adams, who says, this is totally not what I expected. They kind of hammer out some edits. Jefferson, real big, liberal-minded, free thinker. Adams was actually more conservative in his views, more about the rule of law, more about the not the sort of less government support of people, just really a very different kind of thinker. But the two of them came together. Jefferson writes it, they edit it together, and then Jefferson actually turns the work of his life over to John Adams to present it to the Continental Congress. And then it was ratified several days later on July 4th. And so the thing is about this is it was that combination of different ideals that created this new form of government. It would have been very easy. And now Jefferson and Adams argued a lot over the course of their lives, a lot. And it would have been very easy for them to go, no, it's all about freedom of thought, and Adams to go, no, it's all about rule of law. Instead, they combined their perspectives to create this higher purpose. And so the thing that we suggest to the reader in the book is there's a lot of these false paradigms that we get ourselves in, these either-or debates that needn't be the case. And the reason that we do it is because the solution is not obvious. I'll give you a business example. One of my clients, sales guys come in and they say, you know, we need to spend money to make money. We've got to go out and woo these clients and do all this stuff. Finance guys come in. Nope. You need to get approval for anything over $2 that you spend. So you have the finance guys coming from this perspective of we've got to cut costs. You've got the sales guys saying, hey, we've got to grow revenue. And those are two groups that often find themselves at odds. And the reason that they find themselves at odds is often because they're focused on solutions. Finance people think you got to get approval for anything over $2. Salespeople think we shouldn't have to get approval for anything under $20,000. Well, the middle ground on that is what? You know, $10,001? Neither side is going to be satisfied with that. Instead, if the two sides come together and finance says, we need tight financial controls so we don't waste money, and sales says, we need the flexibility to pursue new business. If you start the conversation with that, you're going to come up with a much better solution. The challenge is you don't know what that solution is going to be, because going into the conversation, all you can see is your little lens and your solution that's obvious to you. But if you can dial back to the thing that's really important, the truth, together you will create a solution. You just have to trust in the process a little more.
Now, here's the part where I'm going to play devil's advocate about everything we just talked about. Now, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because the truth is so painful. They don't even want to go there, so they want to make up different premises about what reality is. How do you handle that?
Well, what I have found is, I'm going to put it out there, sometimes people are sneaky, mean, and they lie, and they're not nice. More often than not, they're just afraid, frustrated, and confused, which is very, very different. And when people have sort of made up stories, and we all know this, everyone has a family member that has rewritten the past.
Yes, I do. Yes.
We all have that person. So when people sort of have their story that they tell, refuting the story doesn't work. I had a family member that did this, and I would always want to go back and say, no, it didn't happen that way. I was there. No, it didn't. But they've, like, reinvented the past in their head. So what I find is what they've done is they've reinvented the facts to match their feelings. So until you understand the feeling, they're going to keep putting forth this reinvention of the facts. So, for example, the family member, the sibling, who always said you were the favorite and they never got anything, has reinvented the story of their ninth birthday to be the time mom and dad came home and forgot and it was all about you. It doesn't matter. The facts don't matter. They're going to keep reinventing and reinventing and reinventing. What matters is the feeling. So when you have someone that's saying, well, they're just trying to do this or this happened this way, what you need to do is come back to that point of inquiry and say, so how did it play out from there? And how did you feel? And once they get their feelings validated, the facts of the story oftentimes go away. because why they keep repeating the story is to prove their feeling.
Well,
and once you understand their feeling, they don't need to repeat the stupid story so much.
I don't mind understanding other people's feelings, and because I have feelings too as well. But sometimes people are just way too emotional about things, and it gets bogged down. And emotions sometimes don't get you to the true root of the problem. You ever figure that out too, as well, though, Lisa?
You say emotions don't. Until you handle the emotions, you will not get to the root of the problem. So if someone's bringing all this emotion into it, you're not going to solve the problem until they feel heard on the emotional front. And that's not to say that every problem is solvable. That's also not to say that you have to spend time hearing them emotionally. Because if this is some peripheral work person that's not super important to you, it might not be worth the huge time investment you're going to have to make for them to feel heard. But what I find, in most cases, we overestimate how much time it's going to take. Just a little bit of effort on our part for them to feel heard unlocks them. And so to your point, where oftentimes people say, and this is a very common male-female dynamic, we just need to solve this problem and not get all emotional about it. There's a couple things. Have you ever said that or heard that?
Yeah.
A couple things for men to understand. For a woman, and this is scientific on the woman's brain, emotion and logic can coexist at the same time. When a man starts getting emotional, it clouds his thinking. That is not the case for a woman. Now, if a woman starts to get crazy off the grid, emotional screaming, all logic has gone out the window. But for women, if you look at their brains, the two hemispheres of their brain, when men assume that when emotion comes in, logic has gone out the window. That is not the case for women. Their brains are different. So that's one thing. When the woman's being emotional, it doesn't mean all logic is gone. The other thing, if this is a person, man or woman, that you want to solve a problem with and it's important to you because they're your employee, they're your boss, they're your spouse, they're whoever, until you deal with their emotions, you will not be able to solve the problem. Because the emotions will just keep coming front and center, front and center, front and center, and it will be this distracting energy. So the quicker you can get the emotions out, validate them, you must be feeling frustrated. God, I can tell you're really angry about this. You will literally watch their body change when they go, "Ah, he knows how I feel." Then the emotions change and you're on to solving the problem. But until they believe that you understand how they feel, and it's not even conscious, it's unconscious, but you can watch when you say, "I bet this has caused you a lot of rework and you're frustrated because you're staying up late at night." You can literally watch them just take a breath and go, "Yes." And then where are we? Now we're on to solving the problem. But until you get the emotions out, you won't be able to do it.
She said it, folks. I didn't. I'm just agreeing with her, and I'm going to be very open with this. Women are so much different than men, and men sometimes do not look at the true picture of what a woman's about. I would every single day would love a woman to be the head of my company more than a man, because just the way their strengths are totally different. You ever notice, though, when a woman is strong-minded, they call it the B word. If a man is strong-minded, they just say he's strong, he knows what he wants. That makes sense?
You're talking to a woman who survived corporate America in the 80s and 90s, and I could go down this rant so easily. I could go on this one. What I will tell you is that oftentimes, I work with a lot of women's groups, oftentimes we cannot control the way men are going to respond to us, but what we can control is the way that we show up. And there are some things that we do as women that make us less effective with men. And rightly or wrongly, we can argue till we're blue in the face that that we ought to be allowed to get emotional at work. But when we do and we start to get upset, another woman would take it as a sign that you care a lot about this. A man is going to take it as a sign that you're not in control. And you just need to know that.
Lisa, tell us who you are, please, and how to get in touch with you on your webpage.
You can get in touch with me at triangleoftruth.com. I am a sales and leadership consultant. I write a commentary for Forbes.com, and my latest book is The Triangle of Truth. I also wrote a humor book, a collection of humor essays called Finding Grace When You Can't Even Find Clean Underwear. And I also wrote a personal development book for women called Forget Perfect. So I've done a couple of different things over the course of my career.
Yeah. If anybody wants to call and ask Lisa a question, feel free to do so. Or you can call me on my personal cell, 702-771-8450. And I have a book for anyone today. If anybody wants a book from Lisa, you can give us a call here at 888-815-9756 or 530-327-7602. And I do have a book, and I will send it to you free of charge from me, Mr. Z, on the Corey Myers Radio Talk Show. I am the host where I turn negative into positive, and I've had Lisa on the day. And here's why I wanted her on today. This book that she has out is going to Congress. And it's very in-depth, intel book about a lot of different things. And I see one page here that I really want to cover with you before I let you go today. Act as if. I always like that. And I'm funny that I saw it in your book. Why do you think act as if is so important?
Well, the act as if you already are has been something that's been used a lot to help people become more successful. If you want to be a best-selling author, act as if you already are. Where I use it in the context of the book is in your relationship with other people. If you want to be a more caring, loving spouse or parent, act like you already are. If you want to be a boss who listens more or a salesperson who cares more about their customers, act as if you do. And instead of thinking of it as disingenuous, just think of it as practice. Because a lot of times we want to wait until we have the feeling to take the action. It doesn't work that way. Start taking the action, and it will create the feeling. It takes 300 repetitions of something for your mind to create a muscle memory. It takes 3,000 repetitions for it to become part of who you are. So if I want to be a more patient, calm parent, it's going to take me 300 times where my default would have been to lose my temper or scream. It's going to take me 300 times of saying, wait, I'm going to act like I am a patient person. And after 300 times, it will become significantly easier because my brain will have a muscle memory of it. After 3,000 times of doing it, it will be who I am. So you don't have to wait until you feel more empathetic or feel nicer or feel calmer. You can just act as if, and over time, your body will eventually follow because that will become the default path for you.
Mm. Here we go. I've got a giveaway today. I've got $100. Let's see it right here, folks. $100 for someone who can call in and let me know something about Lisa's book that nobody else knows that I'm looking at right now. $100, yours. I'm serious. $100. That's right here. The book is so. I've never done this before. $100 cash, folks. I'll get it to you if you can let me know something about Lisa's book that I'm looking through right now. If you have the book, you haven't got to email me or text me with the next, say, 45 minutes to an hour, and let me know, and I'm going to see how many people are really interested in about getting some higher knowledge in life. And on my next show, I'll let you know the person who got the $100. I really will, death like that. Lisa, what do you want us to get out of this book?
The number one thing that I want people to get out of this book is I want you to be more successful in your relationships with other people. That's it.
Why? Why do you think being successful with other people is so important? Why can we can't be selfish?
There is not a person alive who is not intrinsically wired to want to be more successful with other people. And when I say more successful with other people, you can't become rich without the help of other people. You can't become well-known without the help of other people. You can't run a family without the help of other people. So when you learn how to become more successful in your relationships with other people, it radiates out onto every aspect of your life. So being more successful not only means you're going to be more successful in whatever your chosen career is, it also means you're going to be a hell of a lot happier. Because the number one cause of unhappiness for us is usually our relationships with other people. You ever talk to somebody who's getting divorced, somebody having a problem with their kids? It doesn't matter how much money they're making or what's going on in their career. That problem, that anxiety, permeates every aspect of their life. So the goal is, if you read this book, you'll be more successful in your relationships with other people, personally and professionally. Life will be a lot better.
Oh, okay. I want to leave out today with something that I feel, one reason why this book attracted me, is the triangle of truth. And the triangle of truth is, I guess, to me, is within yourself. And Lisa's given us some different aspects about the triangle of truth. And to me, everyone has their own triangle of truth, what they want to accomplish and what they want to see. And Lisa just said something that's very profound. We cannot be ourselves without the help of others. I think that's so important. And one thing that I feel that we don't do enough, and I'm guilty of it as well, we all need to sit back and just listen. If you listen for a minute, I think that's a part of the battle of being successful. Is that correct, Lisa?
That's completely correct. And listening seems like the antithesis to being a type A personality. I can tell you, think about it this way. Who's smarter, the person who knows what they think or the person who knows what they think and what everybody else in the room thinks? Listening makes you a more powerful person. It's not wimpy, and it doesn't mean giving up your perspective. It's about gathering the knowledge that will make you more powerful.
Lisa, tell us how to get in touch with you. And give us some away free today, because this show is going to be archived. So for any archive people who want to listen to the show, the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show, they can get archived. Tell us how to get in touch with you and some of your free giveaways on your webpage.
You can get in touch with us at triangleoftruth.com. We've got a lot of free stuff on our website that will enable you to use the model. I'll tell you what it is. The things that I think that we get the biggest response to. We have a white paper for salespeople and sales leaders that tells you how to get closer to your customers. It's called The 5 Mindsets of Sales Superstars. We have another white paper called What the Top 2% Do Differently.
Okay, and can I get those again? Did she leave us? Hello. Seth.
Yes,
she gone?
She did actually leave. I'm surprised. So did it just cut off? Did you want me to bring her back?
Yeah, we can bring her back so I can say bye to her. I hope she
sure.
Just didn't leave
me. I'll try to. Actually, I don't think I can bring her back. She actually was the one who called in, remember?
Oh, well, we'll find out what happens. I didn't know she left me. So, folks, this has been the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. I'm going to find out what the devil happened to my guest. It was a dynamic show. She is the author of the Triangle of Truth. Is she calling back?
I think so. One moment, please.
All right. Sorry about that, listeners. I'm having a good day. Life is good, folks, always. I'm here with you folks here on the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show on BBS Radio. I've had the author, The Triangle of Truth, on. Are you there, m'lady?
I am.
What happened?
I don't know. I was just gone. Anyhow, all I was saying was go to our website. We've got lots of tools for you, triangleoftruth.com.
Okay, and tell us who you are again one more time. I'm sorry.
Lisa McLeod, Lisa Earl McLeod.
All righty. And tell us why your book is going to Congress again.
a group of citizens came together, and we'd heard this a lot when we ran workshops because the book is, it just got a Washington Post award. They said it's the ultimate guide for solving problems and managing conflict. So we got a lot of emails, and people said, every member of Congress should read this book. Of course, I wrote it, so I thought that was a good idea. And the publisher said that they would donate a copy for every member of Congress. And a group of citizens came together and said, we're going to fly to Washington and hand deliver them all. And so I am going with them, and we're going next week, walking the halls of Congress for 3 days, hand delivering 535 books, one for every congressperson and senator in America.
Listen to that, folks. That's the power of the people. You go, girl. Real quick.
Power of the people. That's right. We're excited.
Here's something that I like about you, Lisa, and I haven't told anybody this. I'm a great history buff too, and people don't understand history does repeat itself, and you can also learn a lot from history, so you don't have to repeat it as well too. Do you agree with that?
You don't have to repeat it. It only repeats itself if you don't learn anything.
Well. Sometimes history does just repeat itself, and it just does. It's funny that way, but it just does. But I like that you're a history person, and I am. I just like it because you taught me some things today about Thomas Jefferson and John Adams that I didn't realize. And when they were reading the Constitution on the floor, wasn't that recently? They were reading the Constitution on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Was this past? Mm-hmm. This past month? They sit there and they read the whole thing. I wonder if they got any truth out of what they were reading, or they were just reading to hear themselves talk.
You know what? Maybe both.
Well, folks, this has been the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show today, and I've had Lisa on today with me, and it's been a great, great show. She's author of Triangle of Truth. And Lisa, and going out, tell us who you are. And
Lisa McLeod.
Hope to have you go ahead.
It was a great day. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Have a great day, everybody. This has been Mr. Z with the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. You know what? I'm back, folks, but it's going to take my time to get it better. Hope you folks have a great, great hump day. And I will see you on Friday with Eric. Branding yourself. Okay, folks? So I'm going to say peace out for now. You guys have a great, great day. Love you, everybody. God bless. And, hey, take care of your dreams. Your dreams will take care of you. Bye.